it's the South Side's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's a blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez. And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Donna goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling, 25-20. Got a block for Brown. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Dogs win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Trubisky's going to run it. And he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. The player inside Cradlewood, too. He did it. He did it. Steamboat's leg muscle. And Flair has done it. Flair has done it.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, what's up? And welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN app. We'll open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. On Snapchat, snapjhood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back guaranteed here on this Tuesday night. On the program, we will hear from Jesse Rogers throughout the program. Jesse covering the Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers for ESPN.com. We'll get his thoughts about the Cubs and this matchup against Milwaukee for game number two. Also, we will hear from Ted Albrecht, friend of the program, former Bear, and analyst for the Northwestern Wildcats. We'll talk to him coming up at 8:10 right here on ESPN 1000. What happened? Go Cats? How about no Cats? Against Duke. What was that? We'll talk to Teddy about that coming up. I'm sure he'll be on the deck with a cigar and a nice drink. That's where we usually catch him. Usually on the deck there, just chilling out, looking at the world from his deck. So we'll hear from Teddy coming up at 8:10. We got Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Also, friend of the program, Charles Arbuckle will be on the program as well. Buck has always got some wide-ranging thoughts on college football as well. We'll hear from him coming up at 9:10. And Kevin Fishbane will be with us from The Athletic. He's another Wildcats fan. I got to ask him, I'm going to razz him about his Wildcats and also his Bears information because he does a great job covering the Bears for theathletic.com. So we'll hear from Fishbane coming up at 9:35. And plenty of time for your thoughts as well. That sounds like a busy show, but also plenty of time for your thoughts as well. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. I hope that you had a great Tuesday. Hope that you have a great Tuesday night as we spend together here until 10 o'clock. Then it's Dan Levitard, Stu Gotts, and Greg Cody right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we do this on a Tuesday. So the Cubs are getting ready to take on the Milwaukee Brewers for game number two. And I can't say that I'm surprised. Are you? This Cubs team has been off and on like a wet Band-Aid. It's September 11th, and we all have been wondering if the Cubs are real contenders or fake contenders in the National League. See, it's one thing to root for the Cubs. It's another to totally buy into the team. The Cubs are too inconsistent for me to believe that they can seriously contend for the World Series. And having said that, they still are the best team in the National League from a numbers standpoint. It's funny, right? They are in the NBA Eastern Division National League as leaders right now, this Cubs outfit. It's exactly what they are. You can look at the numbers, and I can't refute the numbers because you look at the one-loss record, and yes, the Cubs are the better team of all those teams in the National League. A lot of young teams in National League, too, that are going to be heard from years to come. But if you take a look at the Cubs over the last month or so, as we talk about this September 11th, let's go back to, first series against Washington on August 10th. Taking a look at particular series, here's what we see. The Cubs won two out of three against the Washington Nationals in that particular series, going back to August 10th. And then from there, they split with Milwaukee. They all of a sudden could not score runs against Pittsburgh because they split with the Pirates. They split with Detroit. They swept Cincinnati. They won 2 out of 3 against the Mets. They won 2 out of 3 against Philadelphia. They lost 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee. They lost 2 in a whole bunch of rainouts as well in Washington, but they lost that series. And now here we are with the Milwaukee series, in which they lost last night by the score of 3-2. Once again, the Cubs are trying to look for offense. If the Milwaukee Brewers go on to win the National League Central, remember two things, okay? Josh Hader, he threw against the Cubs last night. Hader came in to protect a 3-2 lead, faced 6 batters over 2 innings, and threw 24 pitches. He struck out all 6. So the 6 batters that Hader faced, Bodie struck out swinging on a 96-mile-an-hour fastball on 3 pitches. Addison Russell struck out swinging on a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, 6 pitches. Daniel Murphy struck out swinging, 96-mile-an-hour fastball, 4 pitches. Chris Bryant, 4 pitches, struck out swinging, 94 miles an hour. Anthony Rizzo, ESPN 1000 zoned, 4 pitches, struck out swinging. 3 pitches, Javier Baez, he ends up strikeout looking, 96-mile-an-hour fastball. There are some things that the Brewers have that the Cubs don't, and that is momentum. That's the number one thing that you want to have. Right now, the Brewers have the momentum. But as I've said pretty much all summer, it just does not feel right, this Cubs team, because of the inconsistency. I've been waiting to see if the Cubs are going to get hot, and they just have not been able to get hot. As we talk about the Cubs with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So I asked Jesse Rogers the other day. I said, Jesse, what have you learned since the All-Star break about this Cubs team? And Jesse said,
their starting staff was finally going to get it together. I wasn't sure of that well after the All-Star break, and the addition of Cole Hamels has changed a lot. So I didn't know for sure the starting staff was going to find its groove around the break, but they have. So that was one thing. The other thing I think was sort of predictable is that eventually the bullpen was going to wear out, and that's not unique to the Cubs. Bullpens everywhere are wearing out. Why? Because the norm now is starters only going about 2 turns through the rotation. Through the lineup, I should say. So if you're going to go 6 innings or average 6 innings per start, that's 4 innings almost every game a bullpen has to make up, the Cubs included, and now their bullpen is wearing down. So those are things that maybe we could have saw at the All-Star break, maybe not. But in terms of pitching, things have reversed themselves. I think there's more confidence in the rotation and less in the bullpen. That wasn't the case at the break.
Looking at what the Milwaukee Brewers have done as of late, they won 2 out of 3 against the Reds. They won 2 out of 3 against the Pirates. They won 2 out of 3 against the Reds again. They won the series against the Nationals 2 out of 3. They were able to win 2 out of 3 against the Cubs, and they swept the Giants into this series. You talk about momentum, and you talk about a team with a sense of urgency. You keep in mind that that Milwaukee ball club is not a team that can be able to maintain quality free agents or quality stars. They have to grow from within. And they also have to be able to make trades to be able to piecemeal a team together in order for them to contend. Milwaukee, as good a baseball town as it is, they have to be able to put things together with scotch tape in order for them to be able to have a contender. Craig Counsell's team is doing a heck of a job. And against a Cubs team, especially on the road, they have the pitching, they added the pieces that they need to add, and they have the momentum, and the Cubs have never had it all season. They just haven't had it. And something else, too, I want to point out regarding this Cubs team. How frustrating was it for you, if you're a Cub fan, to deal with that national series? Especially with them being on the road, you're not there and you are tuning in and tuning out and tuning in and tuning out and trying to find out, is the Cubs game coming back on or not? That had to be brutal if you traveled to our nation's capital and you were looking to find out, you know, if going to and watch the Cubs against the Nationals. They were postponed twice. As I mentioned, the Cubs lost 10-3 and 6-5, but it was just a mess. And so we come to find out that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, has decided that the Cubs on their off day are going to play the Nationals to make up one of those games. I asked Jesse, who's the blame in handling that whole thing with the weather? Because that forecast did not look good for a couple of days, 2 or 3 days on that trip. But yet the umpires in Major League Baseball allowed the Cubs and the Nationals to wait and wait and wait, and they still could not get a couple of games in. And so I asked Jesse, who's to blame?
I'm not sure you can blame the umpires too much. It's really Major League Baseball and the Nationals. For example, between doubleheaders on Saturday, there was a ceremony for Jason Worth to honor him, and it went on longer than it should have, knowing the rain was coming. Everyone knew the rain was coming. It went on longer than it was supposed to and longer than it should have. So, of course, the back end of that game was delayed, and they knew it was coming late in the game. So the Nationals messed up on several levels, in my opinion, of course. They promoted the length of that ceremony, and it went longer. Major League Baseball, I think, screwed up mostly yesterday, Sunday. They should have let the Cubs come home right away. They haven't had a day off in forever. To make them sit, then cancel it, then reschedule, it just made no sense. Everyone, again, knew the forecast. I know sometimes the forecast can be sort of wonky, and maybe it was on Friday when they postponed it. Though I'm sure the Cubs are probably upset a little bit then because Lester pitched an inning in 2/3. But at least they were going to be there all week, and Sunday was getaway day. So I think that, yeah, on several levels, making the Cubs wait and the Nats as long as they did was a mistake. Everyone knew it was raining all weekend. The Pittsburgh Pirates, for example, canceled their game early yesterday. They didn't make the teams wait around for 3 hours. So I think it all adds up, and works against the Cubs in the fatigue area. I'm not saying it's going to destroy their season, but yes, I think there were several screw-ups along the way.
So the thoughts there from Jesse Rogers. We'll hear from Jesse coming up at the bottoms of the hour with the updates on the Cubs and the Brewers. One other note regarding this whole rain delay situation I want to point out. And this is from Al Yellen, who's been on the program many times with us, who covers the Cubs for Bleed Cubby Blue. He writes this piece called Shame on You, Major League Baseball. Move Thursday's game to October 1st. So here's what he says. He says, as of this writing, the Cubs and Nationals are scheduled to play a 3:05 Central Time game in Nationals Park on Thursday. This is blindingly ignorant of not only the reality of Hurricane Florence bearing down on the Mid-Atlantic states, but this D.C. area forecast for Thursday. A chance of showers or thunderstorms also possible for 2 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high of 84. And Thursday night, a chance for showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a low of 73. He says, so let me get this straight. Even though the hurricane has slowed a bit and might not take landfall till Friday, the landfall will likely be well south of Washington. Weather conditions are likely to deteriorate in the D.C. area. He says that they could play this game October 1st in Washington. They could play this game at Wrigley. They could play this game in Milwaukee. They could play this game at Guaranteed Rate. And so I think the point is that once again, Major League Baseball behind the times. I always say Major League Baseball is like the I Love Lucy of sports. So far behind. It's a head scratcher. If you know Hurricane Florence is coming, maybe it's not a good idea to have the game being played there. On the off day, they're telling the Cubs, we want you to travel and finish up this game and then come back home. It's just so ridiculous. Florence is coming to the Mid-Atlantic. And so this is where we are. So that's just amazing. But typical baseball, not understanding the situation. Al Yellen is right. My guy, Al Yellen, is right because he says that they should play, if you got to make it up, October 1st. Perfect. It's the end of the season. As we talk about this here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. All right, let me move on to something else here. I want to talk to you about. And that is regarding one of my favorite athletes in 2018, Serena Williams. We couldn't get to this yesterday because obviously it's Bears Monday, but some of the things from the weekend we can try to get to here on this program. And so Serena Williams over the weekend had an outburst, an opportunity for her to win yet another championship. She had an outburst with a umpire at the game, at the match that she was in. So let me just give you the backstory for those that missed it. Naomi Osaka captures the U.S. Open. Serena Williams is fined, penalized game for calling the chair ump a thief. Serena was penalized the game for calling the chair umpire a thief during an extended argument as the U.S. Open women's final descended into chaos with fans booing and play was delayed and Osaka wrapped up a 6-2, 6-4 victory for her first Grand Slam title. This is Serena going back and forth with that umpire.
Going to bear the blame when it's the person in the player box who is actually accused of something.
Serena was watching her coach give her a hand signal.
Verbal abuse.
And now
Mrs. Williams.
Oh my goodness, this is very unfortunate. Serena's asking for the referee. Osaka was ready to serve at 4-3. It was hard to hear over the crowd, but Carlos Ramos said game penalty. We said that the third code violation would lead to that.
Correct.
And now Brian Early, in his 39th year of working with the U.S. Open, his last year as a referee, is involved in something incredibly ugly. Ramos explained it early. Donna Kelso is in conversation with Serena, who's near tears now.
Okay, she called me a thief.
And that's not right. This is not fair. This has happened to me too many times. This is not fair. This is not fair, but to give me a point to lose a game for what we're saying, that is not fair. I mean, it's really not. But you know how many other men, do things that are, I don't think they do much worse than that. This is not fair. There's a lot of men out here that have said a lot of things because they're men that doesn't happen to them.
Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. Serena Williams is a competitor, and that same competitor was outplayed by a 20-year-old at the U.S. Open, and she lost. Serena was completely wrong for snapping at that umpire like that. She lost it on that umpire in a way that was uncomfortable probably for some, but you can understand why she was into the moment. She felt like she was wrong. She lost it on an umpire in a bad moment with the mic on and the world watching. She was unprofessional in that moment. That's not me being gender biased. It's just an observation about the greatest tennis player that I've ever seen. And she lost her mind in that moment on that umpire. She went too far, simply. She went as far as John McEnroe. She went as far as Billy Martin. She went as far as Bobby Knight or Dennis Green or Hal McRae or Allen Iverson. You know what happened? She decided that she was in the wrong. And when women want to be able to have the same coverage as men, I am covering her just like any other athlete. Because if that was a guy going off in an umpire, you know that the phone lines would be lit. You know that we'd be talking about it. So we're not going to switch it up because she's a woman. We talk about the Me Too movement. We talk about how you want gender equity more often now than ever before. Well, I'm going to cover her just like I'd cover any other athlete, because man or woman, she should be covered equally. And what happened was, is that she was in the wrong. I am not going to assuage my thoughts for Serena Williams because she's a female athlete. She talks about how there is a difference between how women are covered and how men are covered as far as the judges and the umpires there at tennis matches. And I'm here to tell you that as someone who is pro Serena, that enjoys watching Serena Williams perform, she had a bad moment. I don't know how we can look any way else and try to figure out some kind of pretzel logic on how that's any different than what we heard and what we saw. She had a bad moment. She talks about how, well, men would not be would not get this, and what, you know what? She had every right to complain, but she went over the top. It cost her a championship. Those boos were because the people wanted to see her play. Nobody paid a ticket to see her complain. Now, again, no different than a man on a baseball diamond, no different than a coach on the sidelines for football or basketball or any other sport. But since we're keeping everything real, and because we're talking about men and women in sports, we're not going to switch it up because Serena feels like she was wrong because she was a woman. No, you weren't wrong. You were wrong. That's what happened there. And I know that she's probably had to take it over the years where an umpire is going to give her a penalty because something she said. But when you smash your racket and you're getting upset and you're carrying on like that, yeah, she deserved what she got. She didn't get what she got because she was a woman. She got because she made a spectacle, because she made a scene of herself. That's no different than any other guys that I've talked about in over 25 years of doing sports. And she's over there and she's talking about how that guy's a thief and going after him. Now here, from my standpoint, if I'm the judge, maybe I'm not giving her all those penalties. She can say what she wants. You know, at some point you could just tell her like, all right, I'm up in this chair. This is what I saw. Get back to the match. That's enough. Or we're done here. And maybe that's how that guy felt. I don't know him. And I don't know the sport that well to know whether or not what his track record is. I just know that what I saw was unprofessional. Man or woman. And I know that you're going to get people that think that that's sexist. But here's the thing that you got to understand. You can't on one hand say that, well, what happened at the U.S. Open was sexist because she was a woman. And on the other hand, say, well, cover us fairly. I am covering it fairly. She was wrong. Just like any other coach or any other player that's male or female that I've seen. Bottom line. Now, as far as this cartoonist is concerned from Australia, I saw the cartoon. Can I tell you something? I have seen plenty, and it's kind of what I grew up with, looking in the newspapers of Higgins over the years, with those political cartoons and cartoons that are just outrageous, where they are looking at have someone's face that's just completely distorted and over the top. That was over the top. But not to the point where I was offended by it. Now, she might have been, and the Serena Hive might have been, but I've seen outrageous cartoons like that before. I don't have it in front of me, but I just go by memory. There was a pacifier. There was a broken racket. She was jumping up and down, and her opponent, Osaka, was like, can we just let her win away on the far side? It was kind of a funny cartoon. At the same time, though, I know we're at a very sensitive time, but I will say this. The idea that we have to look at this differently because she's a female is not right. Can't do that. She was wrong. Anybody in that spot is wrong for doing what she did. You say what you got to say and then move on with the match and try to make face and try to and save face in this particular matchup. She was getting beat by a 20-year-old. She was frustrated. And so she needs to understand, as a veteran, as someone who has been there, that she's got to be able to be better in that situation, clearly. So, I mean, we can't go back and forth and say on one end, well, you know, it was sexist what that umpire did, when he's just calling, and there's bad calls in football too. And you don't see football players doing that. Okay. So my whole issue is that the Serena Hive is going to be after people because you got to, hey, I support her. I don't support that act though. Cause that's, I mean, she talks about it's not fair. She's bawling, just much crying on the tennis court in a big spot like that. Mm-mm. You're better than that. And you have to show that you're better than that every time out. Everybody makes mistakes, but that one was egregious. She's better than that. She's got to show that moving forward.
I go work like a doctor. When I rock the mic, you got to like it.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7. Glad that you're aboard. It is the Cubs. It's the Milwaukee Brewers. Here's Jesse Rogers with more. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood. No score, bottom two. Nice little pitching duel so far between Quintana and Chacin. Though Ben Zobrist reached on an error by the second baseman here to open up the second. So Cubs have the first runner of the game on first base. Jose Quintana has been great. So far through two innings, at least, he set down the Milwaukee Brewers in order in the first and second inning. Had a couple strikeouts in that second, including Ryan Braun and the catcher, and Travis Shaw, the third baseman. So good Quintana so far through two innings. Cubs have a runner on second. No score, bottom two. Back to you.
All right, Jesse, thank you. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Jonathan Hood with you. So glad that you're with us. So we keep you company here until 10 o'clock. By the way, fresh podcasts for you. Did you know that? Did you know I have a podcast? Come on. After all this time, you didn't know I had a podcast. Okay. Under the Hood podcast with me, Jonathan Hood. Find it on iTunes, Apple Music. Find it on SoundCloud. Find it on wherever you get your podcast. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Look for that. Download it. Subscribe to it. That way you never miss an episode of our weeknight show here in Chicago on ESPN 1000 or our conversations. I have two great conversations for you that will be coming to the podcast soon. One of them is Freddie Mitchell. Fred Mitchell, longtime writer with the Chicago Tribune. He's an author of 11 books. He's got great stories. Talks about his career as a journalist. Writer Fred Mitchell is going to be a part of the podcast. That guy is a Hall of Famer in my book. What a great guy. And he's talked to so many different people. So we're going to hear from Fred Mitchell on our podcast. Also, Lamon Rucker. You may not know who he is, but your wife may know. Lamar Rucker has been on All My Children. He's been on a number of soaps, General Hospital, I want to say, but also part of the hit TV show Greenleaf on the OWN Network, OWN Network. He is Pastor Jacob Greenleaf on that show, Greenleaf. Davis and I watch that show religiously, if you'll pardon the expression. So we're going to have Lamon Rucker. That is going to drop tomorrow. Boy, what a terrific interview he was, talking about his career. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. Again, download the Under the Hood podcast. It's right there for you. And glad that you're aboard here on this Tuesday night here on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. Okay, so I'm not over it, and it refers to the Bears and their loss against the Packers. We talked about it on the Bears Monday yesterday. And if you still have some thoughts, Sean, open the phone lines. If you have any thoughts here about the Bears and their loss against the Packers and you couldn't get in with me yesterday, we'll open the phone lines, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone numbers. I told you guys yesterday, I pretty much gave you the summer off. I allowed you to spend time with your family and your friends while I talked college football, pro football, baseball, while, you know, trying to entertain you the best I could throughout our summer because the Cubs have been so up and down. So, you know, as we get close to the fall now, it's you and I. You and I need to talk about this Bears team on a daily basis, on a nightly basis. So we need to discuss this. So if you couldn't get in before, because it was full last night, 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. If you have any thoughts about the Bears, I'd be glad to entertain your phone calls. So looking at Pro Football Focus, they gave their thoughts about the Bears. And as I mentioned, I'm still not over that loss, because that was an opportunity that was lost by the Bears, an opportunity for them to be able to take another step, a step in the right direction, where they say, we're on the road, new coaching staff, for the most part, Mitch Trubisky, the starter for this team, with some quality players as far as the defense is concerned. You know, you make that trade for Khalil Mack, here we go, right? It's go time. And then it's not go time. Pro Football Focus wrote this about the Bears and the Packers. They said for the most part in the first half, the Bears used a lot of short passes and outside runs to get their skill players in position to make defenders miss. By doing so, they managed to move the ball and establish a rhythm. Running back Jordan Howard used his patience and vision to hit the holes the Bears' offensive line opened up. The biggest concern over his career has been his inability to catch. However, against the Packers, he was a factor as a receiver, catching 5. Khalil Mack, by the way, the edge defender, was dominant at times, especially in the first half when he recorded several pressures, topping it off with a strip sack, fumble, and interception return for a touchdown. The Bears secondary played well most of the night, but breakdowns in the second half doomed them. Green Bay had scoring plays of 39 and 75 in the second half, and they won the ball game. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I think about this Bears team and the positives that they have and how those positives are going to manifest itself this season. For those of you listening to me for the first time, I said all summer long that the Bears would win 6 games this season. And the reason why is because that's not a pessimistic view. It's just being very cautious and saying, man, if they can surpass 6 wins, that's a good thing. Because with something new, especially in an offensive league, you're looking forward to seeing a Bears team that can be able to come together offensively. Now, I was so surprised to see Tariq Cohen be able to get as many touches as he had. I didn't expect that. And so, especially in the first half, first quarter, I'm like, oh, they look at Cohen as someone that could be a catalyst for this offense. One of them, right? Jordan Howard's patience is nice. It's nice. Jordan Howard is never going to be great. I know Jordan Howard's family doesn't like me saying that, but I don't think that Jordan Howard is ever going to be a great running back. And he doesn't have to be. He just has to be an efficient running back. You notice how much time he took surveying the scene before he hit the hole. You like that. I was talking to Gary Ellerson from WSSP, the former Packer, because we did our on the other side of the Cheddar Curtain conversation yesterday, because we got the Bears perspective and the Packers perspective. And he said, you know, if he's like a Neil Anderson type, that's okay. And I told him, yeah, absolutely. After Walter, it was Neil Anderson, and Neil was never a guy that was overly aggressive, but he was patient. He was a Pro Bowler as well, by the way, Neil Anderson. So it was kind of somewhat seamless from Peyton to Anderson. But if Jordan Howard can be able to catch the football in the flat, and then from there be able to run the football effectively, then that, I mean, that just gives more options to Mitch Trubisky. Trubisky is not the finished product. We saw a lot of young quarterbacks, including Sam Darnold last night, look comfortable and great. Darnold on the road, comfortable. I don't know if that's Trubisky. I'm just not going. Other shows will do this. I'm not going to hot take you and tell you that what Trubisky is or what he is not. It's one game. Last year didn't tell me anything. That was garbage last year. All that JV offense didn't mean anything to me last year. This year, this will tell the story, because there's plenty of weapons here. Now, do the weapons make Trubisky, or does Trubisky make the weapons? We will find out this season. You in the barbershop can talk about how Trubisky is bad and how he's garbage after one game. You do that. That's not on this show. I've seen enough bad Bears football to be able to evaluate and tell you whether or not Trubisky's the guy or not. I will also say this, though, is that, and I've said this a lot this summer as well, is that I saw Trubisky probably more than you did in college. I was not impressed, to the point where I was surprised that Trubisky was so sought after by the Bears to be the number 2 pick overall. I'm like, Well, only with a handful of games or a couple of handfuls of games, he's that hot. Okay, we're going to find out. And we will find out. So I want to get your thoughts. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776, our phone number. Here's my simple question to you. Are you over it yet? Because I am not. On to Seattle on Monday, right? On to Seattle. But hopefully the Bears, just not players, but also staff, learn from that game. You don't take the foot off the gas. I know that Matt Nagy was asked that after the game, whether or not the Bears took your foot off the gas. And of course, you know, Nagy's going to be in full denial about it. He's like, did you take your foot off the gas? He says,
no, not at all, because you're, you know, we were running the ball pretty well. And so we were getting some good yards. We had a couple third and ones where we ended up getting a 5-yard gain and a 4-yard gain and had a third and one, didn't get it. And so there's some times there where it would have been nice to get that first down for whatever reason. But no, you do that, and then you stay aggressive, and then why aren't you running the ball, right? So it's you run the ball. We were getting good yards, and it just happened to the flow of the game changed a little bit, and then we went back to I thought we put together a really good drive there at the end. We chewed up some time. We got first downs, key third downs. We just, we got that field goal, went up 6, which was good, better than staying up 3. And then they scored a touchdown at the end.
That sounds like a man who knows he made mistakes. And you know what? I respect that. But here's what I don't want. I don't want Mark Trestman back. Don't want that guy back. Trestman would explain, and give 2 and 3 minute sound bites, kind of like what's on my screen now. 2 minutes and 22 seconds, 118, 105, 118. A lot of bearsplations, a lot of explanations about what happened with the Bears' loss. Don't tell me about the explanation. Just show me the results next game. A lot of explanations. That sounds like a guy that made mistakes in calling plays. He did make mistakes. And also his poor execution on the other end, too. So when you lose, everybody gets the blame. Not just one, everybody gets the blame. Are you over it yet? 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. We talk Bears with you. We will hear from Ted Albrecht, former Bear. I'm going to get his Bears thoughts, too. And also the analyst for the Northwestern Wildcats. We'll talk to him coming out at 8:10 here on ESPN 1000. Omar in Burbank with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000. What's up, O?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Good, good. I wanted to mention, especially in the fourth quarter, when Trubisky threw that pass to Deion Sims, even though he threw back to him, that ball hit him between the numbers. People say that wasn't a good pass, but the ball was on target. Deion Sims needs to bring that in.
I just didn't like the play call, and I thought it was more toward his shoulders or not. That's what I thought. But either way, you had to run the football in that spot. And going to Deion Sims, give it to him where he can extend the play, not where it's crucial on a third down. If you ran the football effectively with Jordan Howard and I hate the Monday morning quarterback on a Tuesday, but what I'm telling you is that that's the obvious call when the running game works. That still is the thing that bugs me. The game came down to 3 or 4 plays. Those 2, 3 third down plays, that is the thing that disturbed me the most, because it's like now you're just trying to be too cute. I don't care how many plays you got in that bag. You still go with the elementary situation. Down, distance, time. You don't have to dig into the bag and do direct snaps and all this other stuff to show how bright you are. It's some of these guys, and I'm not going to say that's Nagy yet because we don't know, but some of these guys, they have all this voluminous playbook. They have all these different things because you got a fast and shifty guy here. You got a good running back here. You've got a tall wide receiver here. You've got a shifty tight end here. And so it can have all these plays, and this book is like the biggest encyclopedias that you've ever seen. And we're just going to have all these plays because we have them. You don't have to outdumb the room. The Bears outdumb the room in that spot on third down, and you don't have to do that. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Omar, appreciate your phone call. Hanover Park, here's Dave with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's up, Jay Hood? How you feeling?
Good. What's cracking?
Good. Hey, man, so I just wanted to say, he made some impressive throws throughout the game, I thought. A couple ones. There was one where he had a really tight window in the first or second quarter. But I really want to comment on the last drive that we're doing close-ups. to Trubisky's eyes. You could see his eyes, and he looked shook. And I said right there, I'm like, we're not going to, you know, do nothing here. He just, maybe just because, you know, it's his second year. But correct me if I'm wrong, he should be like a senior in college, though, right? Or no?
Junior, senior, yeah. But who looked more shook, you or Trubisky last night? Or on Monday night? Who looked more shook on Sunday, you or him?
And we had the same look in our face because I seen his eyes and it was just like my eyes. I'm like, it's over, you know?
Well, you know why he looked like that, Dave? Is because defensively was different. Did you just notice how, and again, this whole thing is about adjustments. It's all about adjustments. I know that sometimes it can be an overused phrase, but it really is, it comes down to adjustments. Look at the adjustments that the Packers offense did against the Bears defense in the second half. It's one thing to have Aaron Rodgers out there, but it's another thing for Aaron Rodgers to say, I got one leg, I can't move around. We're going to get the ball out in 2 seconds or less and keep the defense off balance and tire them out and have sustained drives. The same adjustments made by the defense. Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator, and I'm thinking to myself, man, why didn't he do that with the Browns when he was the head coach? Why come he didn't dial up those type of plays? The reason why is because he didn't have the horses. But as a defensive coordinator against that Bears offense, the reason why Trubisky had that look on his face, because he saw different looks and he wasn't prepared for it. He saw a look he was comfortable with in the first half, but then noticed the numbers, how they dipped in the second half. Adjustments. Again, me as a Bears fan, I'm a little bit more, you know, an adult than most. You know why? Because you got to give the other team credit, too. You got to give the other team, too, because the Packers, that veteran-laden team, yeah, they know what they're doing, too. So we got to give them credit as well. It's one thing to analyze the Bears and what the Bears did not do, but what did the Packers do to win that ball game? Is Aaron Rodgers is one thing, yes, but look at the adjustments that were made by the Packers from one half to the other. See? I mean, it happens. Now, what happens against Seattle, a team that's reeling with Pete Carroll? We're going to find out about that. More of your phone calls coming up. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our telephone number here on Under the Hood as we talk to you about the Bears. The question we're asking you is, are you over it yet? Is it still stinging like it's stinging to me with this Bears loss against the Packers? Again, we'll hear from a former Bear coming up at 8:10, Ted Albrecht, his thoughts about the Bears as well. But let me get your thoughts. As I told you, oh, my God, at Aaron Rodgers, and he still was not committal about the Minnesota game next week. We don't even know if he's going to – I imagine he's going to play, but he's questionable to play in the Minnesota game, so we'll keep our eyes on that. Man. Bears are so close, but yet so far.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.
You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Glad you're with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jonathan Valparaiso, had my finger on the button and you hung up. Why did you do that, John? 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Taylor Gabriel played 56 snaps per immediate charting after missing most of the preseason with a foot injury. He had a 31-yard catch, but that was a positive for the Bears for sure. Tariq Cohen had 4 carries on third down. That's a positive in the right direction. Jordan Howard tied a career high with 5 catches. He caught all 5 Trubisky's balls, thrown his way for 25 yards, and the Bears are going to have to work this week on getting Robinson involved. The Athletic really did a good job of breaking down the numbers here with that. We'll hear from Kevin Fishbane, by the way, who covers the Bears for the Athletic, coming up at 9:35 here on ESPN 1000. Includes the phone lines we go. We go to Abe in Oak Lawn on ESPN 1000 with Jonathan Hood. Hello, Abe.
Hey, what's up, Jay Hood? How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for checking in.
Okay, so to answer your question first, yeah, that loss still hurts, and it probably will always hurt, and then I will always remember that as a Bears fan. You know, up 17-0 at the half, and, you know, we give that game up. Another thing I wanted to say is everyone's saying that play calling was terrible. I don't think it was terrible. On 3rd-and-1, 4th quarter, everyone in the building thinks you're going to run it, and you go play action pass, and unfortunately, it didn't work. But if it does work, everybody's like, oh, my God, what a great play. But if Trubisky sets his feet on that 3rd-and-1 and throws a dart to Sims, that's most likely a first down. But he didn't set his feet. He threw the ball while I was backpedaling. And, you know, the ball hung up in the air for a little bit. And that's why I gave the defender time to recover and make the play on that. And I just don't understand. If you've seen that play, the Green Bay Packers defense was in the backfield, 3-4 yards in the backfield. So I don't think a run would have worked in that situation, but who knows, you know?
I just think that that's your positive play, though. Like, that's no shot at Deion Sims. I just think that because it's third down, they might be keying in on the run, but at least you have to try. I think it's a higher percentage that you're able to get the first down than Deion Sims coming in cold. I'm just saying. But that's just me, though. I think that the other play that really stood out to me, where's my yellow pad from the other day? Hold on. Bears. Bears angst. Hold on. Oh, so the third down and one play cross field to Deion Sims. The other one, third down and two, Bears up 20-17, 3 minutes left. And to get a field goal out of it, 23-17, point thrown ball to Miller. I mean, he's double teamed in that spot. And again, because it's third and two, you'd rather run the ball than have a covered up Miller. There's got to be a second or third option there for Trubisky to go to. If he's just keying in on Miller, then that's a problem. Yurko, who played the game, said that the problem is that there was too much focus on the second and third read, on the first read, not enough on the second and third read. So that's something to keep our eyes on for Trubisky, is he's got to get better with his offense as well. More on the Bears coming up. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Again, we'll hear from Ted Albrecht coming up at 8:10.
Yo, 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 it's Bears Talk right here with Jonathan Hood. You know, Jay Hood. Call the show now. 312-332-ESPN. Yeah, Bears with you on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.